Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Hi, I'm Rabbi Danny Sexton. You listen to 101.9 Chai FM. We are sharing stories and insights into Jewish destiny and history. And today is the Friday, the 12th of June. The Hebrew calendar is the 27th of Sivan. And what's significant is that the Parsha we read tomorrow is called Parsha Shlach. And Parsha Shlach deals with the Meraglim, deals with the spies and their terrible mission into the land, which was a great failure, something that caused disaster and calamity to that generation and to all future generations of Jews. And in fact, the date that they went in to the land was the 29th of Sivan. So it was 2 days from today. Today's the 27th of Sivan, and the spies embarked on their mission on the 29th of Sivan. So it's the same time of the year that we're reading about the spies. So let's try and get a little bit of insight into what went wrong. Why did they make such a tremendous error? These were great people. These were people who were highly accomplished and leaders of the Jewish people. And so why did they make such a fatal error, which would last for generations? There are a few different explanations and approaches that we can take to answer this question. The first one we will look at is the opinion of a great Jew by the name of Rav Yosef Albo. He wrote a sefer called Akedas Yitzchak. And in that sefer, he says that the problem with the spies was that they were sent on a reconnaissance mission to do a recon of the land and to report back of what they saw in terms of that mission. And they weren't required to give their view, their opinion, their take on the Jews going into the land. They were given the mission of going to gather information and intel. And they came back and gave their whole view and opinion, their whole take on the situation, which was inappropriate and was incorrect. That's what Rav Yosef Albo says about the error, the mistake, the issue that of the spies. And therefore, because they went beyond their mandate and they gave a negative report, which really swayed the way the people viewed going into the land, and the knock-on effect was very, very negative and detrimental to Klal Yisrael. So that was the big mistake that they made. That's the opinion of Yosef Albo in the Akedas Yitzchak. We have a very different view of the Shlach. The Shlach is the author of what's called Shnei Luchos Abris, the Shnei Luchos Abris is a beautiful, beautiful sefer, which means the two tablets of the covenant. And the Shlach says the problem over here was not, unlike Rav Yosef Albo, was not that they gave their own take on the situation. The problem was that their take was a negative one. He said it was appropriate and it was the correct thing to give their view, but they should have given a positive and encouraging view of what was going on, of what the situation was, of what the coming entry into the land would mean. And that would mean that they should say, although it's formidable, although it is well fortified and will be difficult to defeat those that are in the land, Hashem is with us. And Hashem, as we've seen coming out of Egypt and living in the desert and receiving the Torah, we are Hashem's people. Hashem is on our side. Hashem will defeat these formidable enemies. And if Hashem says this is where we must go, so it will be good. That should have been their view. That should have been their report and their attitude. And they should have demanded of the people to have a high level of emunah and to trust in Hashem based on Hashem's track record up to now. Says the Shlach, there was the problem. Not that they gave their opinion, but the opinion that they gave was a negative one, was one that made it worse and was a very bad report that they brought back. So those are the two different opinions, but there's much more to say about that. which we'll do shortly, please God. So please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I'm Rabbi Danny Saxon. You listen to Jewish History and Destiny. We're discussing that today is the 27th of Sivan. The day when the spies went into the land was the 29th of Sivan. And that's the Pasha we read tomorrow, Pasha Shlach. We're discussing the different opinions as to the error, the mistake, the transgression committed by the spies. Rabbi Yossi Elbow says they gave their own opinion instead of just the intel. Right? The Shlach says that it was okay to give their own opinion, but it was a negative one, and it should have been a positive view. It should have been something, they should have shared a message with the Jewish people that was encouraging, that was inspirational, that was based on our trust, our bitachon, and our emunah, our faith in Hashem. And it was actually the opposite. They said, there's no way we can do this. Even Hashem can't save us over here. Sounds a bit like CNN, right? That was their view, and it was taken very badly by the people. The people cried, the people complained, the people became despondent and went into a downward spiral. And the consequence of that was Hashem said, if you're crying for no reason, this will be the day that you will cry in future generations. Now, it doesn't mean that the children suffer because of the sins of the fathers. And what it means is that this would always be a weakness in Klal Yisrael. This would always be the Achilles heel of Klal Yisrael. So if we weren't living up to our responsibilities, we would be particularly vulnerable at this time. And that was the day when they came back from their negative report. And there would be the future day for generations, which was, of course, Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av was the day where we all, the Jewish people, it's always been a weak point for us. And as a consequence, many calamities have happened to us on the day of Tisha B'Av, which is not far away right now. So, and that was the opinion of the Shlach. Now, there's a good question you can ask on the Shlach, and that is, how could the spies expect the Jewish people to raise their level of emunah? So usually when we don't expect others, you know, we can't force upon others to raise the level of emunah. So we have the Torah, we have the mitzvot, we have to serve Hashem. But this required a high level of trust in Hashem. And it's not a fair ask to put that out to the people, because there was a broad range of levels of the Jewish people that came out of Egypt. So that's a good question you can ask on the Shlach. And Rabbi Friend quotes a beautiful answer to that question from the teachings of Rabbi Moshe Shapiro. Moshe Shapiro was one of the great Balei Machshova of our generation. He passed away a number of years ago, and he has many great Talmidim throughout the world that are having a great impact on Klal Yisrael. But Moshe says that, yes, that is true. The principle is you can't demand of others to raise their level of emunah. But he says there's an exception when it comes to Eretz Yisrael. When it comes to the land of Israel, it's important that we realize that things operate on a different level. And it's only through the hand of Hashem that things succeed in the land of Israel. When we are in Galus, when we are in the exile and out of Israel, so things run by and large through Derech HaTeva, through the laws of nature. But when we enter into the land, so it's a completely different, there are different rules of engagement. It's a different game that we're playing. And everything operates directly through the hand of Hashem. And it's only through Hashem's blessing and Hashem's assistance that we succeed in anything in the land. And says the Rav Moshe, that's what the Shlach is telling us, that there wasn't an unfair request that the spies should have made to the people, but they should have told them that in the land, things operate in a different way. And if Hashem told us to go into the land, he will protect us in the land, because things only work through the blessing of Hashem. If the blessing of Hashem is not there, it will unquestionably be an abject failure. And that is very apparent and very clear in the land of Israel. And that's an eternal lesson for us, for Klal Yisrael. is that the terms of engagement in the land of Israel are so much stronger in terms of Hashem's direct involvement. Of course, Hashem runs the whole world, but Hashem lets things run based on Derech HaTeva more out of Israel. And the give and take of the laws of nature are more dominant in Chutz La'aretz, out of Israel. But in the land of Israel, it's directly dependent on our kesha, on our connection, on our attachment, on the blessings that Hashem gives us. And if we things that would seem like are impossible and through the laws of nature would not be achievable, but because the wild card in Eretz Yisrael is Hashem's presence, is the Shechina close, is Hashem residing in the palace, so therefore the impossible is achievable. The that which seems beyond our reach is attainable because of this wild card called Hashem's involvement, Siyata Deshmaya, and Aimuna, our trust and connection to Hashem. And I think that's an important principle and something that we see in our world today, that things that ordinarily just wouldn't go in other places succeed in the land of Israel. And in particular, our survival in that neighborhood. We have 600 million Arabs around us that want to destroy us. It's part of their religion. It's part of the Muslim religion that the existence of the Jews in Israel and the Jews having an independent state in Israel is seen as an affront, is seen as an attack, is seen as a challenge to Islam and to their religion. And they will never stop until they correct that wrong, until they wipe us out and remove that insult from them. And so by the laws of nature, we never should be in Israel. We shouldn't be able to survive in Israel. Look at the unbelievable events of the War of Independence, that you had 600,000 refugees, many of them coming from the death camps of Europe, against five well-trained and well-armed Arab armies. And yes, yet we were able to hold them off, and we were able to push them back, and we're able to defend us. It's just beyond any rational explanation. It's supernatural. And so to all the wars of Israel, the Six-Day War, where Israel was so severely threatened and so outnumbered, both in terms of soldiers and in terms of equipment, that we discussed this on Yom Yerushalayim. And yet, we are able to carry out a stunningly successful preemptive strike, take out the air forces of our enemies before they could attack us, and succeed in gaining a large amount of territory for the land of Israel, for the Jewish people. Absolutely miraculous. And anybody who explains it in any other way, I think, is denying the facts and not being truthful and realistic. So Israel exists on miracles. Israel, our modus operandi in Israel is through the help of Hashem and through the miraculous intervention of God. And we see that too now in our current conflict with Iran. And God forbid Iran should get nuclear weapons. And we're very grateful to America for stepping in and ensuring that that won't be the case, please God. And the incredible successful strikes of the Israeli Air Force and the American Air Force against the Americans, against the Iranians, which were stunningly successful in terms of the, from a military point of view, remains to be seen what will be the diplomatic agreement and whether that will be successful. And please God, President Trump will be successful at ensuring that the Iranians destroy their nuclear dust, their enriched uranium, and they do not have a pathway to a bomb. That is vital, that is critical, that is essential. Please God, that will be achieved. But all the events that occur in Israel and certainly on the battlefield are of a miraculous nature. Of course, we have to do our shtadlus, and we have to put in our effort, and we have to ensure we have the best soldiers and the best weapons and the best air force. That's vital and critical. But their success depends on the blessing of Hashem. And we've seen some of the incredible successes that have come through with God's blessing, thank God. So That's how things work in Eretz Yisrael, says Rav Moshe Shapira. And that's why it was fair and legitimate and correct for the spies to come back with an inspiring report and with an encouraging message and to tell the people, it's going to be hard. It seems to be, according to the laws of nature, impossible. But Hashem is with us. And the way things work in the land of Hashem is through Hashem's blessings, anything can be achieved. That should have been the message, and that was the mistake they made. So let's move on to some other perspectives and views of what went wrong with the Meraglim. We'll do that when we return shortly. Please stay with us.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
So let's now discuss a very beautiful insight of the Zohar HaKadosh. The Zohar HaKadosh is the classic work of Jewish mysticism. And the Zohar says that the problem with the spies was that they thought that they would lose their position of prominence and of power once the people entered into the land. We know that while the Jewish people were in the desert, so the position of the tribes and the role that each tribe would make, the encampment of the Jews in the desert was specific to each tribe. Each tribe had its own place around the Aron HaKadosh, and the tribal leaders had a significant and important position to play. They were concerned that when they went into the land, so everybody would now be focused on making a living, on living as a normal person, having to plant and plow and harvest and live in the land like a regular nation. Whereas in the desert, they were living this supernatural existence, and a lot of things went through the leadership of the tribes. Whereas in the land, they were concerned that they would become obsolete and weren't necessary and needed. And so says the Zohar, and the Mesidus Yesharim says the same thing, the Ramchal, is that the tribal heads thought that they would be brushed aside when they went into the land. And this subconsciously affected the way they viewed the entrance into the land. They weren't even aware that this almost bribed them to see it negatively. This the lens through which they viewed the entrance into the land was a negative one, because they were concerned that their kavod, their honor, and their prominence would be removed. And that is a great lesson for all of us and for all of humanity, is that we have a deep craving for recognition and for honor from those around us. It's a very normal human urge and human desire. Rabbi Frank said so beautifully. He said that just as a child craves candy, so an adult craves kavod. That as we get older, that recognition and that honor that we receive from others becomes more and more important. And I think it's very, very true. And, as we get older, we need that more, and we long for that more, and we crave that more. And it's a very dangerous thing, because it can blur our vision and it can distort our view and the way we understand our life and our situations and our choices. And it could lead us to make bad choices. So we need to detect that. We need to be aware of our pursuit of honor, and we need to keep it in check and constantly think, is my pursuit of honor driving me to make these decisions, or is it distorting my view, or am I seeing things sincerely and honestly and clearly? Unfortunately, says the Zohar, the spies didn't do that, and because of their subconscious fear that they would lose their positions of prominence, they therefore viewed the entry into the land in a distorted way, in a negative way, and they shared that negative report with the Jewish people. And there's an amazing story that illustrates this so powerfully. It's a story about one of the great rabbis of the 18th century. His name was Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz. He was the author of Yaros Tvash and many other famous svarim, one of the great rabbinic leaders of his time. And he was appointed to be the rabbi of a town in Germany called Altona. And he was appointed before the Yomim Noraim. And he had to travel quite a distance to get there. And he said his hope was that he would get there by Yom Kippur. But unfortunately, his travels did not go as expected. In those days, travel was very, very difficult. And he was forced to spend Yom Kippur at a town outside before he got to El Tona. And he arrived at this town on Erev Yom Kippur. And he went to daven in the little shul in the town. And he was davening next to a man. And this man, you know, on Mincha of Erev Yom Kippur, we say the vidui, we say the confession. And he saw this man davening with great concentration and great devotion. And when he got to the point in the vidui where we say, Afar ani b'chayai kal v'chomer b'misasi, I am just dust in my, while I'm alive in this world, how much more so when I leave this world? The man absolutely broke down in tears when he said those words. And the great rabbi, Rabbi Eibschitz, was very impressed with the sincerity and the humility of this individual. And the people in the shul after the mincha recognized him. He was one of the most famous and highly respected rabbis in the world at the time. And they said to him, Rebbe, it's a great honor to have you with us. Where would you like to daven for Yom Kippur? Where would you like to sit? And he said, I'm very happy to sit next to this pious man. I'll stay where I am. Thank you. The next morning, so Ma'ariv also, we say vidui, and again, the man davened with tremendous devotion and broke down again at the words, Afar ani b'chaya kavachum b'misasi. And again, in the morning of Yom Kippur, and Shacharis, same thing. He davened with great, great kavona and broke down when he said those words. And then came Kriya Satora. And Kriya Satora, people are offered aliyahs. And this man, they came to him for the fifth aliyah, to offer him the fifth aliyah. And when the Gabbai came to him and said, please remind me of your Hebrew name so we can call you up for the fifth aliyah. So this man said, you're giving me chamishi. You're giving me the fifth aliyah. And shlishi went to that shmata. And revi'i went to that guy. I'm more important than them. You can keep your aliyah. So that's what he told the Gabbai. And Rabbi Eibschitz was absolutely flabbergasted. He couldn't believe that a man who had such devotion in his tefillah, such kavona, such unbelievable focus and humility in davening to Hashem could behave in such a way. So after davening, he said to this man, I'm completely perplexed. How could it be that you daven in such a sincere, beautiful way, and your tears are flowing, and it's really powerful and a great honor to daven next to you. But when it comes to the aliyahs, you throw the aliyah back to the Gabbai, and you don't accept it. He said, relative to Hashem, I know that I'm absolutely nothing. But relative to these other guys, I'm way above them. I know more Torah than them. I'm more pious than them. I'm a greater Eved Hashem than them. And therefore, I shouldn't be humiliated and be given the fifth aliyah. And Rabbi Eibschitz said, we learned such a great lesson from this, is that, you know, on the one hand, we may be able to see that relative to Hashem, we're small, but covered the desire and the appetite for honor and for recognition relative to others is something that is very powerful within human beings. And even those that are sophisticated enough and are developed enough to work on themselves to be able to serve Hashem, we still have a long way to go when it comes to the way we relate to our fellow human beings. And we need to keep that in check and watch ourselves constantly. Otherwise, it could be one of those things that destroys us spiritually and undermines all the other spiritual work that we do. So this is another one of the very powerful and important messages that we learned from the Meraglim, from the spies, is to be careful and keep in check our pursuit of honor. And as our sages teach us, in Pirkei Avos, kina hataiva v'akavod motzien esa adam mina oilam, that jealousy and the pursuit of pleasure, of physical pleasure in this world, and the pursuit of honor remove a person from this world. The sages are warning us and teaching us that if we don't control these things in our personalities, they will control us. and they will lead us astray and lead us to behave in bizarre and inappropriate and ridiculous ways that will be our downfall. And we have to constantly watch ourselves and ensure that we don't get caught up in our pursuits of power and of pleasure, and we don't lose ourselves in them, and as a result, destroy everything around us, and certainly destroy our spiritual journey that we're all on. We need to be very, very careful in these areas of kina, of jealousy of others, of taiva, physical desire, and of the pursuit of power in our lives. There's one more very important lesson I'd like to share that we learned from the Meragim, that we learned from the spies. And that is an amazing thing that Moshe Rabbeinu said to the spies. Moshe tells them before they go, before they embark on this questionable mission, which actually was wanted by the people, not by Hashem. The people wanted to have like a regular group, army, before you enter into a place, you sense reconnaissance. So the people were putting pressure, and Moshe didn't want to turn them down. And Hashem said, okay, you can do this. But Moshe knew that this idea was fraught with danger. And as we see, the result was disastrous. So what does Moshe tell them? He says, check out, tells the spies, who, by the way, were all leaders of the tribes, as we've mentioned. Umar Aretz Hashmenahi Imraza, is the land a land that is fatty, which means that is fertile, or is it a lean land? Hayesh ba'etz imayin, are there trees, are there not trees? He says, strengthen yourself and take from the fruits of the land. These were the days of the grapes, of the first harvesting of the grapes. So what does that mean? Strengthen yourselves and take from the fruits of the land. So the simple pshat, the simple understanding of that piece of advice that Moshe gives them is strengthen yourselves, is be brave, and bring back from the fruits of the land, which will be very positive and encouraging to the people, that the land has beautiful fruits, and bring them back to show the people that we're entering into a land that produces these wonderful fruits. So that's the simple explanation of that verse. But as we know, every verse in the Torah has many different levels to it. And a deeper explanation of this verse comes from the Baal Shem Tov, the great founder of the Hasidic movement. The Baal Shem Tov says a beautiful idea with regards to this warning of Moshe. He said, the Baal Shem Tov says that v'hit chazaktem ulakachem pri aretz, if we take from the fruit of a tree, right? Where does that fruit come from? So that comes from a seed that was planted in the ground. And then that seed sprouts and grows into a plant, into a tree, and we benefit greatly from the fruits of that tree. But if we look carefully at the way of that process, we see that the seed that goes into the ground has to completely disintegrate. And when it reaches a point that it seems like it's there's nothing left and it's completely destroyed, that's when it begins to grow and begins to sprout. And says the Baal Shem Tov, Moshe was telling the spies that sometimes in life there are times of failure. There are times when it seems like everything is crashing and disintegrating around us. And we feel like we're making no progress in the direction where we want to go. On the contrary, everything is falling apart. And it's at that very moment that the beginning of the growth emerges. So that very moment when the plant begins to seed, begins to sprout, begins to grow. And it's the same for us human beings, is that sometimes in life, we're going to have failures. We're going to have setbacks. We're going to be in a situation where everything seems to be falling apart and disintegrating. But we should know that that's the greatest opportunity. That's when the greatest growth comes. That's when we recreate ourselves, when we reemerge from the disintegration and we grow in a whole new and powerful way. And it's such a beautiful lesson for us, isn't it? So Moshe, through his prophecy, knew that perhaps things would go go south over here and wouldn't work out. And therefore, he needed to encourage the people and fortify them that even if they're failures, we can grow from those failures. But it's an eternal lesson for all of us. And that is in our lives, when we make bad decisions, when we seem to have failed, that is the prime time to actually begin to grow and to take a different route and turn, change our direction and emerge from the soil, from the darkness, and produce wonderful fruits. As Rabbi Shmuel Silber said, that he says that when we enjoy blessing, often the result and the consequence of that is not much growth on our part. That we, you know, when we are blessed with things, we become entitled and we expect more. You know, look around the world today where we live in the most comfortable time in the history of the world and the most prosperous time in the history of the world. And yet, you know, our new generation is completely dissatisfied and expects more and is entitled. But when we have difficulty, maybe if we think of our parents and grandparents' generation, that their lives were hard and they had to eke out a living and they had to really put their shoulder to the mill and push themselves in order just to have a life and survive. So we see that the tremendous lives that they built and the choices that they made and the consequence of that, we all benefit from. So it's a wonderful life lesson in that we all need to realize that sometimes through the failure and through the disappointment, that is the time of our real growth and an opportunity to grow and to change and to develop. And we hope that we learn this lesson, and we hope that Klal Yisrael learns the lesson. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
Chai FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
So today, as I mentioned, is the 27th of the month of Sivan. It's a significant date because in 1942, Anne Frank received a diary for her 13th birthday while hiding for 2 years in secret rooms in an office building. Anne recorded her personal thoughts, and this diary of Anne Frank has become the most widely read account of life during the Holocaust. Anne's family had moved from Germany to Amsterdam after Hitler gained power, but were trapped when the Nazi occupation extended into the Netherlands in 1942. After 2 years in hiding, the group was betrayed and transported to concentration camps, where Anne died of typhus in Bergen-Belsen. It is estimated that there are 110,000 Jews deported from the Netherlands during the Nazi occupation. Only 5,000 survived. Anne's father, Otto, survived and returned to Amsterdam after the war, where he relocated Anne's diary and had it published. After Simon Wiesenthal was challenged by Holocaust deniers that Anne Frank never existed, he proved her existence 5 years later by finding the Nazi officer who had arrested her. Today, the building in Amsterdam where she hid, the Anne Frank House, is a museum visited by nearly 1 million people each year. Time magazine selected Anne Frank as one of the 100 most influential people of the 20th century. So that's today, the 27th of Sivan, where Anne Frank received her diary and recorded her very moving and dramatic experiences while hiding from the Nazis in Amsterdam. The 27th of Sivan is also very significant because on this day in 1941, Operation Barbarossa began. So the English date is 23rd of June. The Hebrew date is the 27th of Sivan today. Operation Barbarossa was the code name for the Axis invasion of the Soviet Union. Even though Germany and the USSR had signed several pacts in the 2 years preceding the attack, these were all ignored when Germany was ready to mount its plan to conquer the western portion of the country, of the Soviet Union. On the Eastern Front, nearly 5 million Red Army troops would be captured and killed, as well as 1 million Jews exterminated by the Einsatzgruppen. This was more than 60% of the Jewish population of the area. When the Germans invaded, they mounted a PR campaign to encourage locals to rise against the Jews, and many did. The Soviets were all too willing to to participate in the extermination of the Jews. And that certainly applies to all of us who are South Africans, who are Litvaks, who are descendants of ancestors who lived in Lithuania. So over 90% of Lithuanian Jewry was destroyed by the Einsatzgruppen shortly following the invasion of Russia and of Eastern Europe by the Nazis. One of the groups that headed this call was the Russian police in the town of Slobodka. Slobodka was home to the greatest yeshiva in Lithuania. On this day, the yeshiva was shut down by the communist regime. The next day, the Germans rolled into town and began a bloody pogrom that would see more than 10,000 Jews martyred. Even though the yeshiva was shut down and so many were murdered, the influence of the yeshiva went on to rebuild Torah in America and in Israel through the illustrious alumni such as Rabbi Lezer Yehuda Finkel of the Meir Yeshiva, Rabbi Yitzhak Hutna of Yeshivas Chaim Berlin, Rabbi Yaakov Yitzhak Ruderman of Yeshivas Ne'er Yisrael, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky of Yeshivas Torah Vadas, Rabbi Aaron Kotler of Lakewood Yeshiva, Rabbi David Liebowitz of the Chofetz Chaim Yeshiva, and Rabbi Eliezer Shach of the Ponovitch Yeshiva. This proves the point that in every generation there rise to destroy us, but the Almighty ultimately saves us from their hands. And that's the significance of this day, the 27th of Sivan. Now, I wanted to mention also, as we discussed the 29th of Sivan, which was the time of the spies, when Moshe sent the spies, was the 29th of Sivan. That's when they went out on their mission. It resulted in the terrible results of the bad report that they brought back, as we've discussed in detail. So that's the 29th of Sivan. The 30th of Sivan, in 1920, Henry Ford issued an apology on the 30th of Sivan, 1920. Ford's apology was for publishing excerpts of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion in his newspaper, Dearborn Independent. Protocols is an anti-Semitic forgery purporting to be the conspiratorial discussions of the Jewish elders plotting to take over the world. Thanks in a large part to Ford, Protocols was, next to the Bible, the best-selling book in the world during the 1920s. Isn't that unbelievable? The Independent also published in Ford's name several anti-Jewish articles. These were published in the 1920s as a four-volume set entitled The International Jew, the World's Foremost Problem. And we see that's the 1920s. So in the United States, you had many that believed these conspiracy theories, and therefore they were sympathetic and supportive of the Nazis in Germany. These books were distributed through Ford's car dealerships. Prior to World War II, Ford lavished praise on Adolf Hitler and the Nazi philosophy, and there is evidence that Ford gave Hitler direct financial backing. In 1938, Ford was awarded and accepted the Grand Cross of the Order of the German Eagle, Nazi Germany's highest honorary award given to foreigners. Even today, Ford's writings are used as propaganda by neo-Nazis. Important to remember what an anti-Semite Henry Ford was, and his publication of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. Please stay with us. We'll be back with you in a moment.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
So we've been discussing the Meraglim, the spies. We read tomorrow Parsha Shlach, which tells us about the terrible incident of the spies, where the 12 spies went into the land, 10 of them came back with a negative report. Only two of them objected and gave a positive report. The consequence was the people listened to the negative report and despaired and cried and were despondent. And because of that, that day became a weekday, a day of vulnerability for the Jewish people for all generations. That was the day of Tisha B'Av. And we learned such important lessons from this incident. We learn that we should have emunah and trust in Hashem, that in the land of Israel, things work differently, and they work directly through the hand of Hashem and through the miraculous nature of the setup of the land. And we also learned that our pursuit of honor can very often jaundice our view to the world. and lead us to false conclusions and be a source of great pain and suffering and spiritual destruction in our lives. And so we should be careful to learn those lessons. And please God, we should remember those lessons that we learned from the Meraglim and not fall to the appetites for power that we all seek, and have trust and emunah in Hashem, the creator of the universe. Thank you so much for listening. Wishing everybody a Shabbat Shalom and have a wonderful day.